on a reset. Yeah. Alrighty, we continue our studies in the book of Leviticus. Tonight we come to the 15th chapter. Now you remember when we were looking at chapters 13 and 14, the Lord had to stop all about the worship and just focus two chapters on leprosy and to show this picture of a person infected with leprosy, something that works on the inside of the person and then eventually works itself out to the point where people can see that they have it. And we saw the diagnosis of leprosy, and we saw the eventual ceremony for the cleansing of the leprosy. And we observed that the leprosy was a picture of sin in the individual. Now, you know, it's awful, but it's just one of the facts of life is that, you know, we have sin in us. And the Bible is the only spiritual book that seems to point that out. It's a funny thing. The Bible talks about sin, and the Bible talks about holiness. And other quote-unquote spiritual books out there don't get as high in the holy ground, and they don't get as low in the sin ground. They just kind of muddle in the middle there and miss everything. And the Bible talks about the holiness of heaven and the sinfulness that leads to hell. Now, in this chapter tonight, in this 15th chapter, we're going to look at a number of issues here that have to do with uncleanness that occurs, and we'll look at them literally and historically, of course, and then we'll look at them spiritually and then a little bit doctrinally on these particular issues. And as we read through this particular chapter, verses 1 through 15 are going to look at infectious issues, issues of infection. And then from 16, verse 16 on, they're going to look at reproductive issues. For procreation, sexuality, whether it be male or female. And the Lord's going to touch upon these things and we'll look at them. So why don't we read through like verses 1 through 15 and then we'll comment and we'll see what the Lord's trying to show us here. Leviticus chapter 15, verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses and to Aaron, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when any man hath a running issue out of his flesh, because of his issue, he is unclean. And this shall be his uncleanness in his issue, whether his flesh run with his issue, or his flesh be stopped from his issue, it is his uncleanness. Every bed whereon he lieth that hath the issue is unclean, and everything whereon he sitteth shall be unclean. And whosoever toucheth his bed shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the even. And he that sitteth on anything whereon he sat that hath the issue shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the even. And he that toucheth the flesh of him that hath the issue shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the even. And if he that hath the issue spit upon him that is clean, then he shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the even. And what saddle soever he rideth upon that hath the issue shall be unclean. And whosoever toucheth anything that was under him shall be unclean until the even. And he that beareth any of those things shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the even. And whomsoever he toucheth that hath the issue and hath not rinsed his hands in water, he shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the even. And the vessel of earth that he toucheth, which hath the issue, shall be broken, and every vessel of wood shall be rinsed in water. And when he that hath an issue is cleansed of his issue, then shall he number to himself 7 days for his cleansing, and wash his clothes, and bathe his flesh in running water, and shall be clean. And on the 8th day he shall take to him 2 turtle doves, or 2 young pigeons, and come before the Lord unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and give them unto the priest. And the priest shall offer them, one for a sin offering, the other for a burnt offering. And the priest shall make an atonement for him before the Lord for his issue. Now what he's showing you here is a reality of the human condition, historically, looking at the Jewish people. The reality of the human condition is we're not all healthy. Okay? The reality of the human condition is at any particular time, people get sick. And often when they get sick with an infectious issue, it'll manifest itself in a way that will often break forth from the person. It can come forth in a boil that has pus in it, or a wound that has a weeping serous fluid out of it that's infected, or it can come in the form of, let's say, an infectious disease that's in the lungs or in the sinuses, and then there's the attendant cough and the mucus that comes out and the spittle and things like that. And the fact that he's showing here is that there are infectious issues that occur in people. Okay, we understand that, common sense. Now, what the Lord is teaching his people here is that that infectious issue results in an uncleanness that should cause a separation from the person with the disease from the people without the disease. And the people without the disease have to be very careful that when they come in contact with the person with the disease, that they need to do some washing and cleansing. This is what God's showing them. Now, this is a remarkable thing that the Lord is doing way ahead of time with his people here, because you're talking about a writing at 1490 B.C. And the concept that things can be transmitted wasn't, I was doing some research here in the World Book Encyclopedia, and the concept of disease, one of man's greatest enemies, kills and cripples more people than all the wars that we've ever fought in. And the Lord is showing about infectious disease, diseases that would be called communicable or contagious diseases that can be spread from one person to another. And the Lord is setting up a system here to protect his people, literally, historically, protecting his people from contaminating one another and spreading diseases in a way of, if you will, quarantine and isolating. This is what he's doing. Now, when these contagious diseases spread from one another, if you don't get a handle on it, like wildfire, you can get an epidemic on your hands, and you can have communication of disease happening quite quickly. Now, long time ago, when the Bible was written, people believed that evil spirits made the folks sick. But God is showing right here that just the running issue, whatever it might be, can cause the contamination. It was not until the 1400s that scientists began to suspect that diseases were caused by little particles called germs. That would be 28 centuries after God put it down here in the book of Leviticus. See, science is slow and dumb. It eventually catches up with the Bible, but the Bible is millennia ahead of science. It wasn't until the 1500s that doctors began to suggest that the germs could be passed from one person to another, and it was in the 16 and finally the late 1800s when Robert Koch, a German physician, and Louis Pasteur, a French chemist, experimented and found the germ theory of disease. So now you're talking 30 centuries later. Aren't you glad you have a Bible? So the Lord was protecting his people. Now throughout history, the Jewish people, as they observed these teachings in the book of Leviticus, lived much longer than Gentiles. Up until, I guess, like 1900, pretty much the life expectancy of a Gentile was somewhere in the late 40 years old, 45, 48 years old, and then you would usually die. That was about it. But the life expectancy of the Jew is found in Psalm 90, where Moses tells you it's 70, or by reason of strength, 80. The Jew always lived to 70 or 80. Why? Because he observed what God told him in Leviticus. He did not understand, he just obeyed. It took 30 centuries before the understanding came, but the smart Jewish people obeyed and they were blessed. I see everybody smiling, and that's good. I like when everybody smiles, because the point is, when we read the Bible, even things we don't understand, we can obey, and we'll get the blessing of the Lord. It's not about our understanding, it's about our obedience. That's the most important thing. So the Lord lays these things out here in this particular chapter. And I mean, as research went on, I mean, they began to find out there are bacteria, there are viruses, there are protozoan. These are little single-cell animals like this, one-cell animals found in great numbers. There's protozoan like the Plasmodium that causes malaria. There's protozoans that cause sleeping sickness. that cause amoebic dysentery. Of course, you got your bacteria, you got your scarlet fever, your whooping cough, your diphtheria, tuberculosis, syphilis, gonorrhea, even leprosy, found to be an infectious type of a disease. And the Lord's setting up all the ways to quarantine and to put someone apart for that and to make sure the continual washing goes on. Fungus diseases like histoplasmosis, virus diseases, smallpox, chickenpox, mumps, measles, all these different, now they find viruses that cause cancer. And the human papillomavirus, the most common cause of cervical cancer. Things like this, and the Lord's going to address this slightly later in the chapter when he talks about reproductive issues. So what we're seeing here is the Lord is setting up something in verses, 4 through 7. He's talking about your bed, talking about where you sit, verse 6. He that sitteth on anything where he hath sat, a couple of chairs, a couch, a place in your home. He's talking about in domestic type of issues, residential issues. In other words, this can be a problem at home. And I guess we know this, right, ladies? I mean, it's so important to keep the house clean and all that kind of stuff. But we're just talking literally. There's good literal advice in the Bible. There's good medical advice in the Bible. There's good nutritional advice in the Bible. There really is. Well, nobody wants to follow it, but it's good. And if you follow it, it will help. We talk about it in Leviticus chapter 11. If you follow the diet of Leviticus chapter 11, you'll be healthier than the average American. Well, it's got nothing to do with my salvation. I know that. It's got nothing to do spiritually, but it's good physical advice. You know, this past week, I guess there was this problem. A local grocery store had some possible problem with somebody doing something and could get hepatitis A or whatever, and everybody was all nervous about it. And I was kind of laughing. I knew nothing was going to happen, not a big deal. You know, because you know what? It's so comical. What was it? Something in the produce section that maybe somebody touched it. It's a possibility, not likely, hepatitis A. You want to get hepatitis A? You want to know the easiest way to get hepatitis A? Eat a food that's forbidden in Leviticus 11, clams. They're loaded with it. You want to get hepatitis A, eat some clams. It's loaded with that stuff. You know where clams like to feed? Sewage. Right there at the bottom where the sewage supply is and all that fresh sewage comes in, they like to eat right there. They're scavengers. So God tells you not to eat stuff like that. See, I mean, you can do what you want, but I like to obey the Bible. It's healthier, physically and spiritually. So, I mean, there's good advice in the Bible, and God's giving good medical advice right here. He talks about not just the residential and domestic issues. He talks about verses 8 through 12, the social or the public domain. I mean, when you go out there and you in public and somebody spits on you, somebody coughs on you, someone sneezes on you, and that the mucus drops get on you and the spit, not that he literally spit at you, although that's one possible way, but just in the cough and the spit gets on you. He's telling you, you got to watch out for that. You got to wash up after that. You can get sick from that. Verse 9, the saddle. Okay, your car seat. Okay, kids' car seats. I wonder what those child seats are like nowadays. You got to wash them up. I mean, this is just practical advice that he's giving there. He's talking about contamination through your clothes, verse 10. I mean, wearing someone else's jacket, wearing someone else's skivvies. I wouldn't do that exactly, but you never know what people do in trading clothes nowadays. The Lord's giving some good advice here. And he talks about the importance of the water and the cleansing with the water and the washing with the water. And actually, in verse 13, he makes a very important revelation to them that it's just not bathing in water, but verse 13, he that hath an issue and is cleansed of his issue, then shall he number to himself 7 days for his cleansing, watch, and shall wash his clothes and bathe his flesh in running water. And that's the key. And this is one of the things you got to pay attention in the Scriptures. The Holy Ghost is a very tight editor. In other words, he says, I've only got so much space I'm going to put all this wisdom in. So I'm not going to repeat phrases over and over. So I'm going to define the phrase in verse 13, bathe his flesh in running water. And whenever you see me tell you to bathe in water again, you understand that it's running water. I'm going to save on terms. If I say bathe, I'm talking about running water, not still water. Now, still water was used for years, just a little pool of water and people would dip their hands in it. Running water is far superior. I got another entry in the World Book Encyclopedia, Volume 17, about a man named Semmelweis, Ignaz Semmelweis. You're probably familiar with this story. They wrote a book about his life called The Cry and the Covenant. Ignaz Semmelweis was an Hungarian physician. He was the first doctor who pioneered the use of antiseptic methods used in childbirth. At the Vienna General Hospital, he discovered that there was a fever called puerperal fever, which was killing women. The death rate in some of those hospitals was getting out of hand. A woman would have a baby, deliver the baby at the hospital, and then die. It was getting as high in his hospital as 12 out of every 100 mothers would die after childbirth. That's an unacceptable rate. That's not normal. That doesn't go on ordinarily when a woman has a baby. You don't have 12 of every 100 mothers dying. You might have one mother out of every 20,000 dying, but not 10 out of 100. So he was discovering there's something going on, and he figured out the doctors were spreading the disease by not cleansing their hands in running water. So he began cleansing his hands in running water, and the death rate virtually went away. What happened? He was ridiculed for his idea, but he maintained his stand. He published a classic work called The Etiology, Concept, and Prophylaxis of Childbirth Fever in 1860. Opponents continued to attack his ideas fiercely. Nobody likes change. One of the things I learned as a young doctor is doctors, I remember it was in a book called The Making of a Surgeon, doctors eschew change. The word eschew means shun, avoid. They don't like change. They get set in their ways and they don't want to change. They're no different than any other sinner. Sinners don't like change. They don't like to be instructed. They don't like to be reproved. They don't like to be corrected. That's why people don't like the Bible, because it's profitable for correction, for reproof, for instruction. I don't like that. Don't tell me what to do. The Bible and God would like to tell you what to do. Doctors don't like it. So what happened? They continued to attack him fiercely, and they threw him out of the hospital. He went to another hospital. They threw him off staff there. They removed his license, and it eventually brought on a mental illness, and he died in an insane asylum. And the year that he died, Joseph Lister performed the first antiseptic operation, and it was soon after recognized that Semmelweis had been right, and now they have a statue to him. Kind of typical of lost people. They don't appreciate great minds. So it was the running water of verse 13. That was the key. The running water. Not this, you know, the Groucho Marx routine of, you know, they're dipping their hands, Harpo, and they're singing, you know. I like that. I love that scene. Very funny scene. You want to learn how not to do a medical exam. Watch a Day at the Races and watch them as they imitate doctors. But it's the running water that's the key. The running water. So that's what I wanted to show you from a historical standpoint. Now, to the spiritual standpoint. Here's what he's trying to show us spiritually. Turn to a couple of books I'm going to show you. Go to Haggai chapter 2. That'd be the third last book in the Old Testament. And get to the end of the Old Testament, Malachi, back up one, Zechariah, back up one, Haggai. Haggai the prophet. There's a guy by that name in Texas, John Haggai. John Haggai the prophet. They don't give Haggai's first name here. They just put him on as Haggai. I like that John Haggai. I get a big kick out of him. Have you ever watched him? Give him praise and glory in the house of God. He's an exciting guy. I like that stuff. So Haggai chapter 2. And the Lord is asking some question by the prophet Haggai, verse 10. Chapter 2, verse 10. In the 420th day of the ninth month, in the second year of Darius, came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet, saying, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, Ask now the priests concerning the law, saying, If one bear holy flesh in the skirt of his garment, and with his skirt do touch bread, or pottage, or wine, or oil, or any meat, shall it be holy? In other words, if you have something holy, and you take the holy and you touch it to something that's not holy, have you now conferred holiness? No. The priest answered and said, No, of course not. That's ridiculous. You can't confer holiness. Verse 13. Then said Haggai, Well, if one that is unclean by a dead body touch any of these, shall it be unholy? And the priest answered and said, Yeah, it shall be unclean. It'll be unclean. You can't transfer holiness, but you can transfer filthiness. I can't, if I have a sick person and I have a healthy person, I can't take the healthy person, run over and touch a sick person and make them healthy. Now, maybe Benny Hinn will claim to do that, but that doesn't really work. What's liable is Mr. Hinn is going to get sick, so I recommend he have an intermediary before he does those healing crusades or wear a mask and gloves. But the truth is, the uncleanness is going to be transferred. That's the key to understand. The concept of contamination is what God's teaching them. Now, spiritually, Jesus will address this in Mark chapter 7. Not only are we of such a nature, such a fragile and tenuous nature here on planet Earth. I mean, we walk around and we're kind of healthy, but we're always teetering on the precipice of getting sick. You ever notice that? I mean, we're just this far away from being sick and laid up. I mean, whether it be an accident that comes in your body, like a broken ankle or something like this, or whether it just be an illness that you catch. I mean, this is the way we live. Now, not only physically, but spiritually, we're walking around, and truly on the inside, there's a weakness to the warp and the woof of our nature. And Jesus puts it like this. They were one day talking to him, verse 14. And when he had called all the people to him, he said, "Hearken to me, every one of you, and understand. There's nothing from without a man that entering in can defile him." Now he's talking about the spirit, because we're going to go to the spiritual level. We're going to go beyond the physical. "But things that come out of him, those are they which defile the man. If any man have ears to hear, let him hear." And when he entered into the house from the people, his disciples asked him concerning the parable. By the way, that's good advice. If you read through the book sometimes and you don't understand a parable in the Bible, why don't you ask Jesus? Have you ever considered doing that? I mean, just get on your knee. I do that a lot. "I don't understand this passage, Lord. What is this parable about?" And ask him. And go to him. And he'll give you understanding. And if he doesn't give you understanding, I'll tell you what he will do. He'll get you to someone that does have the right understanding. Because he's faithful. He knows you want to know truth. And he has a desire to reveal truth to you. He doesn't want to conceal the truth. He doesn't want his brethren ignorant. He wants them to know truth. So they ask. It's a good thing. Disciples ask. Verse 18. And then he said to them, "Are ye so without understanding also? Do you not perceive," watch it, "that whatsoever thing from without entereth into the man, it cannot defile him, because it entereth not," here's why it's spiritual, "into his heart, but into the belly, and goes out into the draught, purging all meats." Now here's what he's showing you in Leviticus. "That which cometh out of the man, that defileth the man, for from within, out of the heart of men, proceed these 13 things, evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetous, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within, and they defile the man." This is the issues that God wanted us to understand from a spiritual standpoint. When a man has a running issue that runs out of his flesh, how's it get out? The sin just bubbles up. The sin just bursts forth. He's just not a leper keeping himself anymore. He's bursting forth, whether it be in his house, like verses 4 through 7, where he sits, where he drinks, where he eats, on the bed where he lies. And these evil thoughts come out of him, these adulteries, these fornications, these thefts, this lasciviousness, this blasphemy, this pride, this foolishness. As this thing runs out, the Lord is saying, you better watch it. It will contaminate others. It will touch others. No man lives or dies unto himself. Sin is communicable. It will spread. That's what he's trying to warn in the 15th chapter. That's what he's trying to put it together, saying, I taught you physically in Leviticus. Let me take it to the next level spiritually and show you. In the heart of man is a deceitful, sinful, wicked, corrupt, defiled nature. And this thing will bubble up. and you'll spit it out and cough it on others, and you'll give a dirty thought to someone else, and they'll run with it, and they'll tell that dirty story to someone else. You ever notice how that goes? The dirty jokes go from place to place. The stories and the filth just goes about, and it just communicates from one to another, and like a cesspool, it flows throughout the community. And God's saying, you know what needs to be done? This person needs to be quarantined. This person needs to be kept away. This person, you need to stay away from that person. He's unclean. If you touch him, you better wash your clothes. You better cleanse in the water of the Word. The Lord is trying to show just how depraved our nature is and how dangerous we are and how difficult it is to just keep our tongue and to hold ourselves. Go to Romans 7. Paul is going to acknowledge the same thing about himself. You know, as we begin to recognize not so much the general picture that men are sinners. Okay, amen, I get that. That there's a sin nature out there. Okay, I get that. But as we begin to get really personal with it, and no longer looking for the motes in other eyes, but the beams in our own, then Paul comes to this recognition. And Paul says, verse 14, we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. The transaction was made a long time ago in the Garden of Eden. And the federal headship sold the entire race under sin. And from that point forward, everyone born with that sin nature. That which I do, I allow not. I mean, the things I do, my own mind tells me from the Bible, I ought not to do that. And what I would, that I do not. Verse 18, for I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. And if that thing just comes up to a boil or to a head or breaks forth, it's going to affect others. I realize the fragile nature of my own condition and how I'm but one step away from doing lots of damage. Do you realize that? James, you know, talks about it in his epistle. Turn to the book of James with me. Chapter 3. If a spit, you know, one of the ways you spit is when you talk. You don't even mean to do it, but, you know, a little spit comes out. James 3, my brethren, be not many masters. Those are people that teach and talk a lot. Knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same as a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. I can only think of one. His name was Jesus Christ. I can only think of one perfect man that was able to bridle everything and never speak an unkind word and speak only the truth. Nevertheless, I tell you the truth. Think of any one of us. Well, at least me. I don't want to include you. Me. Okay? I'm not perfect. And I make mistakes with my tongue. And he tells you, you know, this little thing, verse 3, the bits in a horse mouth that they obey us, we turn about their whole body. Behold the ships, which they be great. They're driven of fierce winds. If they're turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governed listeth, the tongue is a little member. And yet it turns an entire conversation either to holiness or to uncleanness, to praise and worship, or to gossip and discussion of the people in the church. I mean, it's just so easy to turn that conversation, and that thing turns, and you know what? And then the flesh is that running issue. Now that running issue, an issue. You got an issue with it, brother? Yeah, it's an issue. It just ran out. I got an issue. I just let it run out on someone else. I love the way he uses those English words, issue. You know, the true word from a scientific standpoint is tissue. It's a tissue that's running out. But the English Bible leaves it issue. So it is that dual reference. Yeah, it's a tissue, but also it's an issue. And that's how we communicate the sin, by letting these issues. I got an issue with this. I got it. Well, maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you ought to keep it to yourself. And this is how we do these things. This little member, verse 5, this little member boasteth great things. How great a matter. A little fire, you just got to start it. And then it communicates and goes and runs. The tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. And so is the tongue among our members. It defileth the whole body. It setteth on fire the course of nature. It set on fire of hell. That's where it comes from. And so the picture he's trying to give you there with these issues is we got to watch ourselves because we have a sin nature. And our sin nature runs more easily downhill than it climbs up a mountain. And we're supposed to be climbing Mount Zion, but it's a lot easier gravitationally just to roll on down the hill and make a mess of things and make a mess of other people who are trying to climb the mountain as we're coming by and taking them down with us. This is the kind of things he's trying to show. Go back to Leviticus 15. In the cleansing ceremony, of course, in verse 13, 14, and 15, when the issue is to be cleansed, then he numbers 7 days for the cleansing, and he washes the clothes and bathes his flesh in running water. And then on the eighth day, he takes the turtle doves or the young pigeons to come before the Lord. Verse 15, and the priest offers them for a sin offering. He kills them in the blood. And you have the water in the blood. And the water in the blood. And the way it's offered here is the Jewish way. The water comes first, the blood comes second. And that's the Jewish way of doing things. And in Mark chapter 1, I remember when John the Baptist came forth preaching his baptism of repentance, he was putting the water in and dipping them in water. Because 3.5 years later, the Lord would shed his blood for the remission of sins. And the water came before the blood. That was the Jewish economy. Now for us, it's the application of the blood. And then we apply the water on our daily cleansing. If I wash thee not, Jesus says, thou hast no part with me. He's already speaking to saved people. The blood's been applied. And so we see how God kind of inverts things in the New Testament. But it's the both. It's the water and the blood. It takes both. It's not just enough to be saved. Although, don't get me wrong. You made the greatest deal of all eternity if you got saved. But that's going to set you up for the future. But for here and now, now that the blood's applied, the water is needed. And it needs to have the running water. And we need this daily contact with the water to cleanse us. Because, folks, we got issues. That's just the reality of it. We got issues. Now as you go through the rest of the chapter, he's going to move from the infectious issues to another group of issues, which is going to be reproductive issues. And here it's going to start in verse 16. If any man's seed of copulation go out from him, then he shall wash all his flesh in water and be unclean until the even. And every garment and every skin whereupon the seed of copulation shall be washed with water and be unclean till the even. And the woman also with whom man shall lie with the seed of copulation, they shall both bathe themselves in water and be unclean until the even. He talks about the men in those three verses. Now he's going to move to the female in verses 19 through 27. And if a woman have an issue, and her issue in her flesh be blood, she shall be put apart 7 days. And whosoever toucheth her shall be unclean until the even. And everything that she lieth upon in her separation shall be unclean. Everything also that she sitteth upon shall be unclean. And whosoever toucheth her bed shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the even. And whosoever toucheth anything she sat upon shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the even. And if it be on her bed or on anything whereon she sitteth, when he toucheth it, he shall be unclean until the even. And if any man lie with her at all, and her flowers be upon him, the word flow, talking about a particular flow that would come out of her at a particular time of the month, and her flowers be upon him, he shall be unclean 7 days, and all the bed whereon he lieth shall be unclean. And if a woman have any issue of her blood many days out of the time of her separation, I'll explain that later. Or if it run beyond the time of her separation, all the days of the issue of her uncleanness shall be as the days of her separation, she shall be unclean. Every bed whereon she lieth all the days of her issue shall be unto her as the bed of her separation, and whatsoever she sitteth upon shall be unclean as the uncleanness of her separation. And whosoever toucheth those things shall be unclean, and wash his clothes, and bathe himself in water, and be unclean until the even. And now comes the ceremony for the cleansing. But if she be cleansed of her issue, then shall she number to herself 7 days, and after that she shall be clean. And on the eighth day she shall take unto her two turtles, or two young pigeons, and bring them unto the priest to the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and the priest shall offer the one for a sin offering, the other for a burnt offering, and the priest shall make an atonement for her before the Lord for the issue of her uncleanness. And to sum up the chapter, he says, thus shall ye separate the children of Israel from their uncleanness, that they die not in their uncleanness when they defile my tabernacle that's among them. Another primary thing God's setting forth here is, you keep your uncleanness out of my tabernacle. You want to run around with it out there and disobey me, fine, but don't you come in my tabernacle with it, or you may end up dying. That may be a sin unto death. I'll kill you. God was very jealous of his tabernacle at that time. You didn't want to mess around when the glory was hovering over that ark and get too close. So he warned them right there. Don't bring that stuff in my tabernacle. Verse 32, this is the law of him that hath an issue, and of him whose seed goeth from him and is defiled therewith, or of her that is sick of her flowers, and of him that hath an issue, of the man and of the woman, and of him that lieth with her that's unclean. Now he moves in these verses here to the issue of reproduction. And the point he's going to bring across to here is that when it comes to procreation and bringing forth new life, or the very sexuality that men and women are a part of nowadays, is just by the very nature of it, folks, the very nature of what comes out of the man and what comes out of the woman is unclean. And we kind of breathe like a dirty fountain, like a defiled fountain, uncleanness. And that's why the flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God. Now, from a literal historical standpoint, he's given real warnings here to how men and women are to be careful in terms of the separation one from another, and where the only place that there's going to be safety is in the marriage bed, which will be undefiled. And even in the marriage bed, there are times when there's to be separation and to be apart, not just for prayer and fasting, but for a particular time of the month, the time of the month when the flow is occurring. Now, the woman has this cycle that she goes through. This usually it's a 28-day plus or minus something. Everyone's a little different. Basically 28 days. And there's a 3 to 7 day period where the issue in her flesh, verse 19, is blood, where the uterus is letting forth the blood, the lining there. And for this period, verse 19, she should be put apart for 7 days. And of course, there are some women, unfortunately, that have a particular type of disease that now the doctors call a dysfunctional uterine bleeding, D-U-B. And it would be a woman that for some reason has a prolonged cycle that just goes on and on beyond 7, 14, 20 days. I mean, there's something wrong. It's a real disease beyond just the normal cycle. And this is the woman that would be in verse 25 here. This woman that has an issue of blood many days out of the time of her separation. It run beyond the time of her separation. And if that happens, all the days of her issue, she's unclean, as in the days of her separation. You remember this happened to Jesus one day in Matthew chapter 9. Probably remember the woman that came to him, Matthew chapter 9. Now he's just showing the frailty of the human condition, but he's saying recognize, understand the frailty, and beware. Now I want to tell you something. We live in a generation that has made a complete mockery of this. And sadly, so did some of the Jewish people. I'm going to show you something in the book of Ezekiel that's really sad. And you may have never caught it in your own reading, but I'll show you carefully. Matthew 9, I just want to show you this passage here. In verse 20. And behold, a woman which was diseased with an issue of blood 12 years came behind him and touched the hem of his garment. For she saith within herself, if I but touch the hem of his garment, his garment I shall be whole. And of course Jesus turned about and saw her and said, daughter, be of good comfort, thy faith hath made thee whole. And the woman was made whole from that hour. But this is an example of the Leviticus thing, someone going way out from the separation. This would be a sad and an awful, if you will, cross to bear in the Old Testament if the Lord allowed a Jewish woman to have this. But if he did, she had to understand, according to the Levitical law, that she needed to be separated all that time. Because there's transmission first literally, of infectious properties in that blood. And there's transmission of uncleanness in that blood. And there's transmission in the man's seed of copulation of uncleanness. A lot of things can breed in there, folks. A lot of proteins in there, and proteins feed all kinds of bugs. And so the Lord first has given, from an historical standpoint, just a warning to the folks. Now, sadly, I want to tell you just how wicked the human mind is. Turn to Ezekiel chapter 18. We live in a day now where, and the sexual revolution of the 60s, everybody just wants to go out and have sex. And supposedly they think they found a way where they can do this without consequence because they now have birth control devices, whether it be pills or condoms or whatever. Back then they didn't have stuff like that. But sad to say, the very thing that proceeded out of the heart that Jesus spoke of in the 7th chapter, the adulteries, the lasciviousness, all that kind of stuff, that still went on. Now maybe it's all done out in the open. Back then it was still done, but behind closed doors. Remember, the woman in adultery was taken to Jesus. This stuff went on. And this is one of the ways that they did it back here, which is pretty pathetic. And the Lord is just reminding people about the sour grapes. And verse 4, "Behold, all souls are mine, saith the Lord," Leviticus 18:4. "As the soul of the Father, so also the soul of the Son is mine. The soul that sinneth, it shall die." And the Lord's angry. And here's what he says. "But if a man be just, and do that which is lawful and right," and watch this, "and eateth not upon the mountains, neither hath lifted up his eyes to the idols of the house of Israel, neither hath," watch it, "defiled his neighbor's wife, neither hath come near to a menstruous woman." You want to know the common way to fool around back then? That was the way they did it. See, because one of the things you didn't want was you didn't want a baby. So the way you did it, since they didn't have birth control pills and they didn't have condoms, the way you did it was, that's how they did it. That's how they fooled around, in direct violation to the Levitical law in Leviticus 15. That's how you fooled around. On that 7-day period, that's what they did. That's sad. And what a mess. It's pathetic. But that's what went on. And the Lord, today we're just so smart. We just have so many things, or so we think. But I have a book here, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Women, Sex, and Feminism. And these politically incorrect guides are pretty interesting because it tells facts that politically correct people, like liberals, don't like. And the risks of safe sex is a chapter in here. And even with the increased awareness about sexually transmitted disease, and the increased reported use of contraceptions, the prevalence of infection of sexually transmitted diseases has continued to climb over the past 4 decades. And, for example, every year, approximately 10 million individuals between the ages of 15 and 24 contract a sexually transmitted disease. Every year, 10 million between the ages of 15 and 24. Look, be not deceived. God's not mocked. Whatsoever man soweth, that shall he also reap. And the Lord's showing these folks in Leviticus 15, this is dangerous stuff. Well, we're way ahead of that. We're 30 centuries ahead of that. We're not. Yeah, it's still, you're going to reap what you sow. Genital herpes grew 30% a year since 1970. Today, the CDC estimates 45 million Americans over the age of 12 have sexual genital herpes and can look forward to a lifetime infection with periodic outbreaks of sores and issues running out of that region. The human papillomavirus has received increased attention. Its relationship to cervical cancer, and the CDC estimates that nearly half of all sexually active people outside of marriage will acquire human papilloma infection during their lives. Chlamydia now is the most commonly sexually transmitted disease, and the incidence has skyrocketed during the last 20 years. And this is in spite of using all these contraceptives that are being used. The truth is, these sexually transmitted diseases are increasing at incredible rates, and the sad thing is they're not gender neutral. Women are far more likely than men to contact a sexually transmitted disease. A woman's 8 times as likely to get HIV and 4 times as likely to get gonorrhea. It's just the reality of it. And in this book, on the harsh truth about public schools, you think they'd run from these numbers. Instead, they run toward them. And now what they're having is, in California, 10-year-olds are being surveyed about sexual matters, asking them what you think about touching other people's private parts. And to make it easier to get this kind of information across, California has abolished a law requiring schools to obtain parents' consent before the children are included in these sex surveys. And these sex surveys are now starting as low as kindergarten. And don't delude yourself by thinking these things only happen in California. The teachers' unions and other activists are pushing for it in states like yours. This is the kind of stuff going, the liberal hates God's law. He hates the Bible. The liberal man is vile, Isaiah 32, whether it be social or spiritual. And if he's spiritual, he'll end up being a social liberal too. And the Lord is laying this stuff out for them, right there, for their protection, for their admonition, for their warning, and for their obedience. And prayerfully, you know, we will follow these things too. Leviticus is a book that has practical, physical, good advice in it, in addition to the spiritual advice. Now, spiritually, what we understand is this, and the fact that he's showing is that from the point of a man and a woman having a baby, that which is born is unclean and defiled. And the only hope it has is to be washed in the blood of the Lamb, needs to come one day to the door of the tabernacle where the high priest, and only the high priest, can make atonement for the man or the woman or the child. And at that point, they're able to come into the tabernacle. Before that, all you do is you defile God's tabernacle. The spiritual lesson is that you need the cleansing power of the blood of the Lamb. And then from that point forward, you need washing in the water of the Word. So that covers pretty much the 15th chapter tonight, kind of a sobering teaching. But God has to bring this forward to remind us just how dangerous we are to ourselves and one to another, and how much we need to humble ourselves and be like Moses. We need to be meek, and how much we need to cling to the Lord, and how much we need to walk after the Spirit and not after the flesh. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this sobering teaching. Lord, help us to take it to heart and understand that you put these admonitions in there to warn us for examples, and that we would beware and we'd be not ignorant. And Lord, just draw us closer to thee. Help us to think on the great salvation and the pure and the good things in the book of Philippians, Lord, and set our affection on things above and not on these earthly things and the lusts of the flesh. I pray even this day, Lord, you would cleanse our heart. I ask for a portion of thy Spirit. In Jesus' name, amen.